is Smashville Live.
And Rene takes a long elevated shot, bouncing, and he scores!
Live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Smashville Live on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app. Streaming live on Facebook Live, Twitch, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com.
And hello again, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of Smashville Live. It's all presented by Red Spirits Wine, New Amsterdam Vodka, Chase McCabe, and the voice of the Nashville Predators, Pete Weber, here with you. Thomas Bocoon will be our guest tonight, and he'll be joining us momentarily. You can, of course, listen on traditional radio on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can watch us on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, all of those things, Pete. It's amazing. You've been in TV and radio for a long time. We can do it all from our homes now, and that's exactly where we are.
That really is amazing. And obviously we enjoy this. We don't maybe enjoy the reason that we're put in this situation to do it, but the capabilities really open up a lot of possibilities for things later on. For example, if you want to continue your singing career, Chase, what a thing this would be for you. You could do virtual concerts.
I know. I could try that. I've played the guitar on the radio a time or two, and that has been fun. That has been well received. So certainly could do that. And then, but it allows us to kind of give a video portion of things to our listeners at home. And we're looking forward to having Thomas Bocoon join us here in just a few minutes. Cause I said earlier today, I was very excited about talking to two former Predator goaltenders all in one day. Of course, Chris Mason does a weekly with us on Darren Donick and Chase 10-2. And then, Thomas Bocoon will join us here in just a few minutes. So, those two were there at the very beginning, and I know you were too, so you got to see it all with those two in between the pipes, but kind of fun to be able to chat with them in one day.
Yeah, it certainly is going to be. And I got to tell you, Thomas was a very special player. I probably should have brought it in from my other room. I still have a portrait shot of him in my family room off to my right here. That's how highly I think of him. How much I enjoyed all my conversations with him. And he's sitting behind me oftentimes on the team buses and asking me questions about one of his Czech heroes, Dominik Hasek, because I had worked with him in Buffalo. And so he was especially asking me questions before Thomas went off to play for the Team Czech Republic in the Winter Olympic Games in Turin, in Italy, in 2006.
Wow. That's because I forgot about that. The crossover that you've had with some of these players over the years through your time in the NHL. Because the Dominator, as he was called in Buffalo, you got to see him quite a bit.
Well, Dominik was totally unorthodox. And if you don't understand that term, just watch him 10 goal. I mean, on occasion, he considered his goalie stick to be like an encumbrance that would bother him. Sometimes he'd just lay it down and go pick up a puck with his blocker hand, or he'd lay down his back, do a snow angel, and do one of the required things to make the stop. And that was kick up his pad and stop a shot, or use his head, his helmeted head, to make a melon save. I think he probably patented those.
And we are joined now, for those of you watching at home, by former Predators goaltender Thomas Bocoon. He is with us and getting everything set up. Thomas, good to see you. Thank you for joining us here tonight on Smashville Live. How you doing?
Hey, guys. I'm doing good. Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year to you.
Yeah.
For sure. We were just talking about, Pete was telling a story of how you and him used to sit next to each other or close to each other on the bus and talk about Dominik Hasek.
Yeah, we did. I mean, he was my idol, all childhood. So there was a lot to talk about. I mean,
yes,
he had a pretty good career, the guy.
Yes,
and he was a character also. So, there's a lot of stories about him.
A character, an incredible competitor, Thomas. I mean, he would keep the guys on the ice for the morning skate if somebody beat him on a shot he think he shouldn't have been beaten on.
I know. He was amazing, Never going to be duplicated, six Vezina trophy in a row.
I don't think so either.
Trying to do that in nowadays.
Yeah, very, very difficult. Thomas, you came here in the expansion draft having played, what, in 3 years as a pro, one NHL game. And it was not a game that you wanted to remember at all. I recall that because we went into that same building in Philadelphia when you were with the Predators. And that was one you'd like to forget as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, at the start of the career, you know, the, what is it, Wells Fargo Arena wasn't my rink, but I turned it around later on. But, you know, it was a tough start, obviously. You know, things kind of work out in mysterious ways and sometimes. And, you know, it was a good learning experience. I mean, it was devastating at the time, but, you know, I learned from it a lot, and it helped me throughout my career in, you know, later. So it's always, you know, when something, I would say in that moment, not positive happened, you know, especially for young player and all that, it's, you know, how you deal with it, you know, how you respond it and all those things. So for me, it was definitely not something, those feelings I kind of go back and like to remember, but I also take it as one of the, you know, eventually positive experiences, and it kind of opened my eyes and show me, you know, what needs to be done if I have a, if I want to have a, another shot at playing NHL. So in a kind of weird and, you know, pain away, I'm glad I went through it. So
what was it that did allow you or help you most to turn things around for yourself?
Well, I think getting in better shape, obviously getting a second chance. I mean, you can do lots of things. If you never get another shot, then, you know, then you're done. So, obviously, you know, Nashville coming into the league and having an expansion draft, and in whatever way I get to Nashville, I got picked up in expansion draft, and I talked to David Poile, and, you know, he kind of was very honest with me. He told me, you know, this is the kind of rap you have. You know, you're not in good enough shape. You need to get in better shape. All these things, and we're willing to help you. We're willing to invest in it if you're willing to invest in it. And they basically said they will pay for my whole summer training, my stay in Edmonton. You know, under the condition I'm gonna, you know, attend all the practices unless I'm obviously hurt or something. So it was a kind of two-way deal, and I think it worked out good for both parties. So
how much in those early days did Mike Dunham push you, and then later on Chris Mason, who of course is still around as part of the broadcast team, but how much did that competition between you and Mike Dunham help you get better?
Well, I think Mike being a number one goalie, he came over, he was kind of slotted for that spot, and you know, in especially in goalie work, you're either looking up or you're looking down. And, you know, so either you're getting chased or you're chasing somebody. And that's just the nature of the business. And not just those two guys. I mean, you look at back then in the league, there was 30 teams. Now it's, I think, a couple more. It's a stiff competition. There's only, you know, limited spots, and some of them are occupied for very, very long years. So any goalie I play with obviously pushed me and made me better. You know, it's just the nature of the position, and two guys always competing. There's always, you know, if those two guys are not going to get the job done, they're going to get somebody else who's going to do it. And, you know, I was always trying to learn from every goalie I play with, and they were vastly different people. You know, Mace was, you know, extrovert, very outgoing guy, very, very fun, very, Mike was more, you know, Mike was more, you know, kind of, you know, golf player, kind of quiet guy to himself, and didn't show a lot of emotions. You know, like I said, everybody's different, but you know, I think, you know, with Mays being there long time, and you know, I think we really hit it off, even as a people and being friends and all that. So I learned separate the on ice competition from, you know, from the life in street clothes and, you know, being away from the ring. And obviously when, you know, when it's a competition for playing time and all that, you do everything you can to outperform the other guy or other player. But, you know, off the ice, there's no reason, you know, not to be friends. And at the end of the day, the other goaltender probably has the most understanding what you're going through and all that, because, you know, the experiences are similar. And I went from being a backup, being a starter a long time, then back going to backup. And, you know, so I kind of went through all the, you know, all the parts of, you know, of the journey. And, you know, they all have their, you know, people think, well, you know, it's easy to be the backup. You only play a few games, but keep up, you know, keep yourself up, you know, in playing shape and being ready. And also, if you don't have a game, you have a long time to sit on it and think about it. And you don't know when you're going to get another chance. On the other hand, when you're starting goalie and everybody, you know, obviously your contract reflects your position. Everybody's expect, you know, premium from you all the time. And, you know, you know, sometimes you get in a situation when the backup plays a couple of good games, people start saying, well, maybe he's better than the, you know, the guy is overpriced, we switch them and all that. So, you know, being an NHL goalie, you will face different kinds of pressure at any, you know, whatever your role is at that moment. And that's why it's very, you know, tough position to play. And you know, you play team sport almost under credentials of individuals. So it's, you know, it's not easy, but it's also so much fun, because you can make the, you know, we were talking about Hašek and all that, you know, he was probably the most important player in a, you know, history of the game for his own team, because I don't think, you know, I don't think, with all due respect, all these other guys, and now I'm talking about modern history, you know, I cannot go too far back, but, you know, obviously you know, it's always debatable, but he took an average team at best, you know, to game six in Stanley Cup final. And you know, year after year, he performed at the level where the team was, you know, obviously playoff team every year, and you know, with some deep runs. So it was remarkable.
I've had scouts tell me, Thomas, that the Sabres, they won the division title in 97, and they said that the Sabres had four third lines and a world-class goaltender. And I think that's essentially what you just said.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate assessment in, you know, most hockey people opinion. And, you know, I never forget, actually it was the first time we ever play against Dominic. I actually didn't play. We play in Nashville, and you know, we were expansion team, and the Sabres came to town, and you know, I think he was the reigning MVP and Ted Lindsay winner and all that, Vezina winner, all those things. And you know, we were expansion team, we lost, I think, the game we lost 2-1. And we outshot them like 46 to like 23 or something. And,
yes.
And I remember Barry Trotz telling me the next day, he went to Lindelof and said, well, you know, obviously, you know, this guy is incredible. And Lindsay say, yeah, he certainly is, but I hate to see him, you know, have to do it every single night. You know what I mean? So, you know, all these stories, it's like, you know, to live it. And like I said, I follow him long time before he made it to NHL. And he was as good as he was in NHL in Europe, dominating. And basically, you know, I mean, same. He basically did the same thing you know, back home where his team won the championship and they were never anywhere near to be a top team. So
well, his path was blocked when he first came to Chicago by Ed Belfour. So he had to overcome that as well.
Of course. And not just that. I mean, looking at him play, you know, people were laughing at him. And I was actually, you're gonna laugh. I was on a Zoom call today with, I don't know, you of course will remember Jan Lašák.
He's, oh, yeah. He was with us.
He's a goalie development coach for Slovakian Federation now. And you know, he runs these podcasts, and it's actually a really cool idea. They get all the parents and little goalies and all the coaches, and basically they bring, ex-goalies and people around goaltending, and they have these podcasts and people tell their stories and, you know, kind of explain their path in their life. So, you know, we were talking about it, how unique his style was, Hašek's, and, you know, he was basically he invented his own kind of play, and nobody was able to duplicate it till today, you know, just the way he was able to do with his body, and everything kind of made sense for him. Believe me, I try hard because he was my idol when I was a kid, and lots of the stuff he did, it sure didn't work for me. But
well, he had a bad back. He was doing all these crazy stretches.
Yeah, but like I said, he was incredible. You know, he was one of those players where, you know, you just watch and appreciate, you know, the genius of how he plays and all that. So,
Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McKay, Pete Weber, and our guest tonight, Thomas Vokoun. So excited to talk to him, tell some stories. It's all brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine. We'll have much more coming with one of the greatest Predators goaltenders of all time when we come back here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Corcum breaking down with Ilona. Ilona the shot. Now taken in the zone by Lume for Phoenix. Lume with a shot. Blocked down by Vokoun. 6 seconds to go. Adams at center. Throws it in on net. Stopped by Vokoun. He goes behind the net. Clears the zone. And there you have it. The first shutout in Predators history. Thomas Vokoun, who started the year third of the depth chart in goal, is the author of the Predators' first shutout.
There you go, the great Pete Weber, my co-host tonight on the call, the first shutout in Predators history, Thomas Vokoun. And yeah, that song, Song 2 by Blur, played a lot at Bridgestone Arena or Nashville Arena back in the day. Welcome back into Smashville Live, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine. You hear, when you hear those old clips, Thomas, I mean, what kind of memories flood in your mind? Just the work that you did and you all did as a team back in those days.
Well, first of all, I got to say, it's probably better to hear them than see them because it makes it so exciting. I was like, oh my God, this must have been safe. Like, you know, like a top 10 safe of the year. But no, just joking aside, you know, obviously it was exciting for us. You know, lots of guys, some of them display, some of them young guys, some guys were guys who didn't have a, you know, good role in a different organization. You get a fresh start. You get a, you know, you get a new start. You're starting a new town where, you know, hockey is basically existed in a certain degree because I think they had a East Coast team there. But,
yeah.
But you know, so, I mean, for the players, it was for a lot of us, it was, you know, second chance and you know, it was special. I mean, just getting to Nashville, I didn't know what to expect. I never really been in the South, in North America before. And obviously knowing it's, you know, hockey wasn't very not popular, but there was not a lot of teams. There was teams in Florida, but kind of, you know, higher up, there wasn't a lot of teams. And so I think what struck me first, it was the totally different feeling of the organization than what I came from. And, you know, David and people who he hired, it was totally like family feeling. And I think being a somewhat, players who were, we didn't really have any big stars. We were like tight group and everybody was, trying to make name for himself and, stay in NHL or get to NHL and all that. So obviously, it was special for me. I end up staying very long time and kind of went through the whole phase of the franchise from the start, the highs when we started and all the people were excited, and then the dip where, people already now expecting, okay, you're playing the fourth year and they seeing, and the kind of the new being, the new shine kind of wears off, and now the fans getting a little bit more knowledgeable and then they expecting, they expecting the team to win and all that, and so, it's people say, once you do it something and when you're the first, it's always special. So coming back to it, lots of guys never get the chance. You go to these more established franchises, you have to be really, really good to kind of put your name in any of these columns and, all-time statistics and all that, because obviously the nature of the sport is, players, they come and go and the franchise stays. So for me, it's nice to, have that first shout out but I'm proud of, that's an individual achievement. I think, getting the team into the playoffs and kind of being part of where it is now and all that. And it's a very, unusual and good success story for, for Southern based team in North America. And a lot of teams have problems, and there's few stories like Tampa Bay Lightning and Predators and teams who really, kind of cut on and even in the unusual geographic locations, they doing well and they're able to put good product on the ice and so Nashville deserve it. They have a great fans. It's a great town, and I can be more happy for their success. So
you came here at the right time. You were 22 years of age. What great timing for you.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I got my, like we talked about before, I got my chance in Montreal organization, and you can say I was in the right time in the right place, and I wasn't ready. So I just, now looking back, it was good. I got the second chance, and this time I was in the right place at the right time, but I was also ready. So, and I really believe that, and I put the time and the work the whole summer in, and believe me, it was not fun. So, sometimes you really kind of get what you deserve. And when I didn't deserve it, I wasn't successful. And I think in my opinion, when I was, when I did deserve it, I did succeed. So.
Well, you certainly worked hard for it.
Absolutely. The Predator way was a phrase that Barry Trotz and David Poile used a lot in those early days of outworking your opponent. And a lot of that was, as you were talking about, was you're an expansion team and you maybe didn't have the paid players and some of those guys, but you guys won. And it was 2004, I guess it was, you get to the playoffs for the first time. But that whole mantra, that phrase has come back under John Hines, and maybe changing up the name, however you want to put it, but it's the same idea. What did that philosophy mean to you in those days when Barry would preach the Predator way?
Well, it's very simple. I mean, you can, as a player, you can only control certain things. As a coach, you can only, control certain things. We all are in that position where, I think David had the most control over things, but on the other hand, he has budget he had to work with and all those things. So he cannot do everything he wanted. One thing I think they all kind of went, because they have a year or even more before the franchise started, I think the one thing they agree on. They want to have a, you know, tight group. They want to select people based on their character, off and on the ice, and you know, they want to have hardworking people, and they bring people like Tom Fitzgerald and, you know, people who are not necessarily, you know, at the moment top players in the league, but they were really respected guys and always said the right things and, you know, give good kind of leadership to the young guys we had and all that. So, and I think that's how we built. I mean, you know, it's not like today when really like the expansion rules benefit the, you know, team coming in. Back then it was, you know, it was lot more, you know, tilted toward the, you know, existing teams, and, you know, the new team always struggles. So you look at Columbus, you look at Atlanta, you know, Minnesota, all of those teams, they were not stuck up at the start, you know, at the start of their kind of journey in the NHL. So I think they did the right thing. And I think that always stay in Nashville, just the way, you know, there's a vibe, certain vibe in the city and all that. And it kind of translates to even the players. And I think one thing what's deservedly so, it's amazing. You know, you always have, you know, people kind of say, well, Nashville, you know, are they ever going to get free agents, and will ever the top players really like choose Nashville over, you know, maybe playing in Boston or Rangers or one of those big market teams? And you can see now, they achieved that, and they achieved that, you know, you don't do that overnight. It's not just going to happen because you talk about it. I mean, you have to, you know, the stability of the franchise, having coaches for a long time, not, you know, not circulating, you know, not panicking with, you know, after setbacks and all those things, you know, keeping familiar faces around, like Pete. I mean, how long, you know? So all this, you know, you look at some franchises, they struggle with that, and they turn. There's a big turnaround of players. There's a big turnaround of front office people. There's everyone, and it's hard to kind of start rebuilding every year, building on something new. And you can say all those things, but if you don't have a kind of long term vision, and you know, kind of stay with it, and you know, methodically, you know, put the pieces in place and wait for your time. And, you know, I think it was a big, obviously, just like my second chance, I think Predators get the second chance when, you know, the local ownership group step up and they got involved. And, you know, I remember the year I was leaving, you know, the team was kind of up in the air, and it was, you know, nobody knew what's going to happen. There was a lot of rumors and all that. And so, you know, like I said, you know, everybody needs a little bit of luck, and I kind of things fell in place, and they're doing great. I mean, I've been to Nashville, you know, every year lately, and it's awesome to see, you know, me and Pete, we had some memories when we were introducing, you know, we were trying to bring fans to the stands and kind of, you know, drive around and promote hockey. And believe me, sometimes it was a sad sight, you know, see us in,
that night in Chattanooga.
Yeah. So, you know, trying to catch people, and I think we were in Walmart or somewhere, and
yes,
you know, they have absolutely no idea what sport we're playing or what the hell we're doing there. And you know, it's a whole lot different now, and it's great to see.
Absolutely. Pete Weber, Thomas Vokoun here on Smashville Live, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the evolution in net for the Nashville Predators with Thomas. We'll do that next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Puck thrown in ahead of Perreault. Sullivan reaching for it, chopped out Scott Niedermeyer. And a pass to Fedorov breaking in. His shot, a stick save, Vokoun. A huge stop on Fedorov, of all people. Marco breaking in with under a minute to go in a tie game. It's a beautiful day.
Here you go, more highlights. Thomas Bocoon, our guest tonight here on Smashville Live, Chase McCabe, Pete Weber, and having a blast telling old stories. And we were talking during the break about just how much, and we talked about this before the break too, of just how much the city has grown, not just the fan base of the Nashville Predators, but it has all grown. But the evolution of your position, now you were in, I believe, in some training camps with Pecorine. There is a little bit of overlap when he was brought into the organization. And in fact, in the hallway, there is a picture that has a very, very young babyface Pecorine in the back with you and Mace in the front. So you guys did overlap, but now young UC Saros is getting his turn and as Pekka has gotten older. But what have you seen out of the goaltending position, starting with Pecorine, since your time here in Nashville?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's the nature of life. You can't stop time. And, you know, Pekka, when he came, I mean, he was, you know, came from Finland. Like, he was one of the first, like, very, very huge goalies when they really start, like, drafting guys who were, like, you know. And I remember when he got drafted, it was actually, I think, during the 2004 or 3, he got drafted. And I was playing in Finland because there was a lockout in NHL. And he was a backup goalie for Karpat Oulu. And they were like, well, this guy's drafted in Finland. Or he's drafted to Predators. And I look at him, I'm like, I look like a little baby compared to him. So, he really come into his own and obviously had a great career. And, you know, stay all his career in the same organization. It's, you know, says a lot about you as a player and as a person. And, you know, because they're not going to keep you around. You could be, you know, as good as you want if you're not a good person. And, you know, he's a good person and he did lots of things. And like I said, you know, what can I say? I mean, he, you know, won Vezina Trophy and all the achievements he had, you know, it's the only unfortunate thing, you know, they weren't able to win, but it was fun to watch. And like I said, I mean, he, you know, it's not just the things he did on the ice. He did a lot of things in the community, I understand. And, you know, for him being around now and being obviously, you know, kind of at the twilight of his career and, you know, the franchise deciding to have him as a kind of, you know, guy who's going to be there for UC, you know, to help him and kind of, you know, they had a good relationship and UC waited a long time for his chance and kind of now his time. So, you know, obviously, like I said, that's, it's inevitable. It's going to happen. And eventually you get old and then you can't play NHL goalie for, you know, till your 60s. And that's just the way it is.
Thomas, you were talking earlier about the question mark, would the Predators ever be able to sign free agents? How did you feel as a player when all of a sudden Paul Kariya decided to sign with the Preds?
Yeah, that was a big thing. I mean, Paul at the time was a considered star in the league. When he signed, I mean, it brought the excitement level of the fans. You know, it totally, we got Steve Sullivan a year prior to that, and, you know, who was a really good player for the Predators. And, you know, we had some players coming up, and he decided this is opportunity for him. And, you know, everybody who knows Paul, he's the kind of guy who likes that back then small town, you know, small town kind of feel of Nashville and not being in spotlight and all that, just go about his business and play hockey and all that. So it was a good fit. And he had, you know, I think 2 or 3 great seasons in Predators uniform. And, you know, he helped a lot the franchise. And, you know, it was, you see, it's always, you know, it was steadily going up and up the curve of you know, the notoriety and all that, bringing players, Jason Arnott and all that, and, you know, growing their own players. I mean, you know, Nashville scouts are known from picking up excellent defensemen and a goalie. So, you know, it's, you know, you look at the players they, you know, they drafted from, you know, Ryan Suter, Shea Weber, I mean, household names, you know, Seth Jones and all these guys. And it was a good environment to be kind of groomed as a young player. And then, you know, a lot of players, Scott Hartnell, a lot of people have a really good careers. I think not only based on hockey, but based on coming out of organization where they understood, you know, how to behave and what it takes to be a professional and all that. And so,
Thomas, what do you remember about October 27th, 2007? It would have been your first game back in Nashville, this time with the Florida Panthers. You actually had an assist in that game, but Predators get the win, 2 goals by Vern Fiddler. But just being in the visitor locker room, skating on the ice, and of course, if you play in Smashville and you're the opposing goaltender, the fans will tell you what they think about you. Yeah. I know that was difficult because they had cheered you for so long to have the "you suck" chance. I know it had to be difficult, but what was it like from your perspective?
I mean, it was definitely, you know, weird experience, especially being in that guest locker room, you know, because you've been coming to the ring for years, and it's almost like you used to go get newspaper in the morning and you can kind of walk with your eyes closed and just know where you're going. So it was mixed feelings. I mean, it's some time ago too. So I don't, you know, I didn't even remember Vern scored 2 goals, how unusual that is, but, but in one game, I mean, as a player in NHL, there's a saying, if they traded Wayne Gretzky, anybody could be traded. So you just got to be prepared for that. And life goes on. You just move on and try to do the best you can for, you know, for your current team. And saying that, I will always have, you know, a special place in my heart for Nashville and all the memories I had there and things kind of we went through as a team and people I met and not just in hockey. I mean, I lived 9 years in Nashville or Franklin and Brentwood and so I met a lot of people outside of hockey and had a lot of fun and met a lot of fantastic people. I still keep touch with people from Mario. So I cannot say one bad thing about my experience, you know, being in Nashville for those 9 years.
When you came back for that game in October, I'm just wondering how or what sort of greeting did you get from partner? Did he hug you and crush your ribs?
I got a good one. I mean, I don't think he even at the moment he realized I was playing for a different team. He just was surprised he saw me in the visiting locker room. But he's been part of that whole kind of, you know, character of the team and all that. Been there so long, and you know, it's great to see. I mean, he's been around many players, and you know, he probably knows the most players in NHL, be honest with you.
Yes,
not
you're
all
correct.
The people. So it's like it was always fun. He always put the when we were feeling down, and, you know, he would always do something and bring guys back up. And you know, I had the privilege being on his first road trip when they bring him for the, you know, when they bring him for the road trip. And I think we got off the plane and we're traveling in the bus and he start opening anchovies, you know, those you can smell them.
Yes.
Off the whole bus. And you know, I have lots of stories from, you know, from past. So
yeah,
That game, just to wrap that part up, his first game back. Goal scorers for the Predators, Pete: Vern Fiddler with two, Radek Bonk, and the game winner was Jared Smithson.
Wow, quite the roll call there.
Yeah, it was all guys who didn't score a lot, I guess. So, you know, those are the ones you're watching out for, the, you know, you're watching out for the ones who should score, and then those who you overlook, they bite you in the butt, you know. So
last year, Thomas, we were in morning skate in Ottawa, and all of a sudden I look in the stands and there's Radek Bonk. He has his wife and family there, and he said he took his daughter out of school because he told the teacher that she was supposed to see Dr. Rene.
I like that.
Yeah. That's
very good. Pete Weber, Chase McCabe, and Thomas Vokoun here with you tonight on Smashville Live. It's all presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine. We'll come back, and it's flown by. We'll come back and wrap it up with a few more stories up next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
It is Smashville Live, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Pete Weber, the voice of the Predators, and former Preds goaltender Thomas Vokoun has been our guest here tonight. Now, Pete, we get into stories during the break too.
Yes.
And one just came up that I'm going to let you set up.
And I wanted to apologize because in going back for the old clips, I could not find quickly enough to send in either of Thomas's scraps with Jerome Iginla, because I always found those so out of left field, Thomas. And I don't, you later were Jerome Iginla's teammate with Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it was for some funny conversations, but you know, things happen in the game, and sometimes you don't even. It all started very innocent. I mean, he was just chasing a puck and he hit me by accident. Of course, I was not looking, you know, I was looking at the puck, so I didn't know he hit me on accident and all that. There was a big, and then it kind of like, you know, it was nothing really personal. I mean, I have all kinds of respect for him. He's an unbelievable guy and all that. So, you know, but it was entertaining.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I think about that. We're talking about it after all these years. So things happen, you know, in hockey. And obviously it was a different era of hockey. And it was a little bit more, you know, it was still a little bit more scrapping and all that. So it was part of the game back then.
Now, and you and Kiprasov had a couple, or had one, if I remember correctly. Was that, I guess it wasn't the same game, but was it the same game where there was basically a line brawl between Calgary and Nashville?
Yeah, it was basically the same game. That was actually the game.
The last faceoff?
Yeah, it was a different one because the first one was when he hit me. It was Jimmy McLennan playing the first one, and then we liked it so much we made it like a 1 year occurrence. So on every year anniversary we fought again and all that. So no, but kidding on side, it's like I said, they were, you know, it's a loud building. Calgary is a loud building, and they always play hard. So naturally, it's sometimes get scrappy and all that. And like I said, those were, you know, fighting. I wouldn't call fighting. It was throw punches and then you on the ground or referees holding you or whatever. So, you know, believe me, I pick a wrong guy if I want to fight somebody in Jerome Iginla. So thankfully I had my masks. I still have all my teeth. So
there you go. You're the winner.
I got that going for me. So that's good.
We have about 2 minutes left, but with the realignment because of COVID and trying to get all the games in, the Predators find themselves with the Detroit Red Wings in their division and Columbus once again. But you were a part of that budding rivalry of, you know, so many times I hear people talk about Nashville looking at Detroit, wanting to model themselves after that franchise. But you had Pred Wing fans that were at the GM plant and. But what do you remember about some of those early rivalry games against Detroit?
I mean, being scared, for one. You look at their lineup. I mean, they were basically all-star team, and they had young and middle-aged and unbelievable veterans. And, I mean, they were the deepest team in the league and by far. So You know, it wasn't benefiting us playing them eight times a year. But I remember I loved to play against them because they shot the puck a lot. And you know, I as a goalie like that. I didn't like the games when you get 15, 20 shots and you stand there and then you made a one mistake and looks like a bad game, you know. So they put a lot of rubber on the net and it kept you in the game. And it was always measuring stick for us, kind of where we are, and just playing against these guys. And their power play was amazing, you know, with Brett Hull and Brendan Shanahan and Yzerman and Larionov. I mean, you go down that list of names and you're like, can't believe all these people play, you know, Lindstrom, and, you know, they all play on the one team for a very long time. And so good times, good memories. And you know, that, like Pete said, that old Detroit building was something else. I mean, it was old, but it was fun to play in, and fans were right there, and everybody was wearing, you know, basically that's, you look at Nashville and some of these very happy, like Pittsburgh and these teams who are successful now, that's how it was there. I mean, you come there and every single person in the stands has a jersey on, and it's sold out every game, and you know, people can get tickets even if they wanted to, and it was fun. It was really fun.
Well, Thomas, we really appreciate the time tonight. This has been fun. It's been good to catch up with you. And Pete, appreciate you being on with us as well, because a lot of stories, and it's cool to see where the franchise has come. So take care, and we'll do it again soon.
I'd love to do it, because Thomas, I think you and I could go 3-4 hours.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, right. Put Crispy easily in the mix.
Easily.
Absolutely.
We'll crack a bottle of wine open, maybe even longer.
Yes.
Here you go. That sounds like a plan. Appreciate New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits, and Wine. For Pete Weber and Thomas Vokoun, I'm Chase McCabe. Slapshot Radio with Paul McCann and Company. That is next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.